Well, I mean, I think what happened to us, that our generation of artists, men and women, was that by the end of the 60s, when the boom, which was dependent on the American market, completely dropped out, and that meant that there was something like 15 artists at the most being supported in this country through private galleries, which forced us into totally rethinking about the whole structure of art. And in a sense, it was a kind of blessing in disguise. We were kind of the most fortunate of artists and the unfortunate, most unfortunate of artists, because we didn't ever have any of the financial backing of that sort of art market thing. But on the other hand, we were able to have a good look at the whole system. And the growth of artists' organisations in this country from 1970 on was quite incredible. There's all sorts of things. I mean, the community artists groups, artists meeting place, Artists for Democracy, Women's Free Arts Alliance, and so on and so on. And I think it's through artists actually having to find a different way of funding their work and actually looking at where their position is, rather than knowing that you're eventually going to work for an art market, because that art market didn't actually exist.
Right, no, I think that probably made a big difference.
So that people actually had to start thinking, well, where does the artist fit in society? And where am I going to fit? And I want to be someone who's employed as someone who's working, rather than someone who may eventually sell a piece of work. And then that, I think, has kind of dictated a whole lot of the whole way that art has gone in the last several years. But I think it's easily overturned. I mean, I don't think that it's permanent by any means.
Also, you have the advantage of living in a socialist country. I mean, I know it isn't as socialist as it could be, but the fact remains it's a hell of a lot more socialist than America is. I mean, we don't even have a socialist party that can get it together. And you do have the framework of the Labour Party. I mean, a lot of people, you and Conrad and various other people, have worked, you know, within the unions to some extent.
Yeah.
And we have been very District 65. Well, I won't even get into that because it's too complicated. I don't really know enough about it. But we've never really done much anything with unions, and American unions as a whole. I mean, they're good unions and bad unions. It's
well,
a
there are here.
Mixed
there
up. Yeah, here. Yeah. I mean, there's no framework behind the unions that you can.
Well, I don't think there was particularly here. Actually, I think what we recognised was that the best organisations in the country that reached the most ordinary people were the unions, and they had the best structures for that purpose. And there hasn't been a vast encouragement by any means, you know. And we're still trying to get things like the TUC to make proper use of its gallery space and stuff like that. They've tended to quite ignore the whole cultural area, although there are three unions which cope with cultural workers, apart from visual artists, that is. It's been a matter of finding a niche and recognising that, for instance, the union that I've been working with, there are a lot of things that you just simply can't go along with, but there are a lot of things that make it easier for you to use your work in certain ways.
Like what?
Well, for instance, the GNMWU was the union that amalgamated with the Federation of Women Workers.
say what these things stand for, because all these initials.
The General and Municipal Workers Union brought, or the Federation of Women Workers, which is a trade union of women, formed in about 1887, I think it was. They went into the GNMWU, and I think it was a mistake, actually. But what it meant was that that union was more biased towards equal pay and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so they had women officers and various things like that, which made it easier for someone like me to work with someone within the union.
The focus on the unions and the place of the unions in the sort of daily fabric of most people's lives is different from the States. I don't quite know how to put it. I mean, it's not that we don't have unions, and it's not that they don't have a bloody lot of power, yeah. Heaven knows, but because it isn't a socialist country, it isn't as tied to the union. I mean, the unions are, although they can tie up the country like any other place, I mean...
But this
is something very, very different. Well, it's a lot more socialist than America. You live here, you realize you're in a, to some extent, socialist country, and not in such a totally overwhelmingly capitalist country.
Yeah,
where everything is totally towards consumerism, and the same thing goes with the art world. I mean, it's not the difference between East and West Berlin, but it's a difference. It's really a difference that you feel.
Yeah,
it's a. Anyway.
So, do you think that you've outlined then made it possible for the feminist art practice to grow much more rapidly because it was kind of outside?
I think that one of the great dangers has been for the feminist art movement, which I refuse to call it, generally, but I mean, I'm willing to say feminist art movement, but I'm not willing to say that the art is a movement art. I mean, there's no style, or there's nothing that makes it a cohesive movement on that level at all, but the danger is really that everything we've done is going to end up by getting women into the system. And I know that you and Conrad both feel differently about this getting into galleries thing, but when you see the way people can be co-opted and sucked up by a really heavily working market system, then you have very different doubts. I mean, I think that's one thing. Yeah. And I mean, I know there are, a lot of feminist artists who, for better or worse, have used the movement, or maybe not even consciously, some of them, others consciously. Use the movement to get into the system, and then lost all interest in the feminist art movement. And are you still doing that? I mean, that kind of thing, is exactly the danger of any kind of political art movement.
I mean, especially one
that is temporarily chic, which in America we have this, we still have to some extent, and it goes on in Europe, and I suppose to some extent goes on, this sort of Marxist artist business. I mean, artists calling themselves Marxists who don't have any, their work has nothing to do with political subject matter, and B, whose work is a sort of rip-off of political subject matter. I mean, everything happens in sort of more so in America somehow, because of all the money, and I mean, in New York. But there are artists who are staying out of this, who are doing really, Martha Rossler and Alan Sekula and Fred Lonardier on the West Coast, who is doing things that really sort of parallel what Conrad's doing with the
pneumoconiosis.
He's doing health work, things for the union, and compensation work and so forth.
But they're
better off outside of New York working like that.
But can they carry on like that? I mean, I can see that whatever happens, that you have to cope with shifts every now and again.
Shifts what in the aesthetic
in an atmosphere. I mean, there's been some kind of sympathy for the area over the last few years. I mean, there's been sympathy for feminist art practice. But how do you continue to exist without devaluing some of your ideas? And I think it's a very difficult thing to sort out when you live in a mixed economy, because you've got to do something while you're living within that mixed economy. You see what I mean?
Mixed economy being the semi-socialist and semi-capitalist. Yeah. I mean,
And I think that within the next few years, I think there'll be another change round. It's bound to happen.
I mean, backlash or
yes, I mean, I think we're already in the backlash. I think there are two things one has to keep in mind: that you work for an eventual change, a sort of long-term goal, and the other thing is to try and cope as best you can within the system you've got.
Yes, survive.
Yeah. And I mean, the same must go for yourself. Mm. I mean, there are things that you must really like to do, but there are things that you've got to do in order to carry on.
Needless to say.
And
what do you think the goals are? I mean, as far as feminist practice goes.
Feminist art practice.
I mean, I think the goals really are just a continuity.
One of the things that I hope that won't happen is that we seem to have just reached the tip of the iceberg, in the sense that we're only just beginning to discover certain things. We're only have got to a stage where we've gone through a certain amount of re-looking at history and various things, to start now to assess where we are and where you go from there. And I think the main thing is a kind of continuity. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the worrying things is that people are very tired. It's been a very wearing experience.
Well, who knows? And it's always the same people who are doing the work.
And it needs I suppose, propaganda with younger women. And I don't know whether we're doing that adequately or not, actually.
I think the schools are immensely important. Since I'm not an educator, really, in any sense, I mean, I've never really taught, and I don't have any feeling for education, per se. And in fact, I was sort of brought up in university towns and so on. But it does seem to me that the education aspect of it is tremendously important. I mean, I started last year talking to high schools for no money so that I could get to younger women, because by the time I get to them, often they've had it, you know, they've built up this idolization of male teachers or something. I mean, by the time you get to women in art schools, it's often, I mean, they're 18 and it's too late in a funny way, or it's too late for them now, and you know what's going to happen, because we now know pattern that it's going to take them another 10 years before they think, oh my God, you know, look what was happening to me.
Yeah.
This kind of thing. I mean, I would love to see things happening, you know, from the age of 12, 13 on. I mean, I mean, some basic consciousness raising that would be, it could be fairly low keyed. It wouldn't have to be all ranting and raving rhetoric. But that, I mean, and this is feminism as well as art practice. I mean, it can be going on in the art classes just as well as as in the other classes.
Well, I mean, I think that the problem being is that the most overriding dominant theme is advertising and television. And advertising is so flexible.
Yes.
It can use the women's
And it's used every art that's come up, too.
I mean,
it's
every art style. And turn it round. And, it is like capitalism. It is so flexible.
Well, like that ad that was in the Whitechapel show. I can't remember whose work it was in, I'm afraid. It says, she's not just a pretty face, some women's magazine ad. Which is, she's not just a pretty face, is a feminist sentiment.
Yeah.
But the way it was presented, and it was like, well, she's almost just a pretty face, but she's not just a pretty face. It was sort of a bizarre thing where you think, oh my God, they're saying, they think they're saying the right thing, I mean, on this level.
Yeah, well, I recently gave a talk with a girl you'll meet tomorrow, Jo Spence from the Hackney Flashers, and Vic Bergen. And she flashed up some things on the screen on advertising and how advertising had changed its attack and used very sort of butch images of women for advertising and things.
And not butch, but tough.
Tough, sort of, that's
but
right,
tough,
yeah.
The most awful kind of sort of, yeah, like hard as nails, feminine tough.
Yeah,
which,
yeah,
is not butch dyke tough.
Yeah, yeah. But sorry, that was the wrong word.
A,
yeah,
a hard line of lipstick and a mean look in the, yeah, eye. This is nobody you can kid with. I mean, this is a tough customer. There's a house, good housekeeping ad or something in America that gets.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and she's all dolled up, but she's the toughest customer an advertiser can run into. I mean, do you think that the place for, I mean, there certainly does seem to be a concentration on that for artists in general here, and feminist artists in particular,
on
more so than there is in the States. You know?
Yeah. I think.
I mean, the
yeah,
you see, Women Against Violence Against Women group do a slideshow about advertising and stuff that is spine-chilling. I mean, just taken from straight.
I mean, I think there's a definite recognition of the hegemony of advertising, and I think Peter Fuller put it quite well in the seminar at the ICA recently, that the development of laser beams and holography could be well be transferred, you know, to sort of three-dimensional advertising. And you can see that if we would look back on our own decade, you know, say the far distant future, that the most visual art form that would come out would be this advertising of totally sort of superficial things. And it won't be art, the culture that will come through would not be art practice as we know it, you know, as we're involved in, but it would be within that whole advertising thing. And I think,
yes,
you know, we've come to recognise that. And it was something that the women's movement was very aware of, but really didn't know how to cope with it in the early days.
Well, I think the stickers, which have been done in most countries by now, I think, I don't know where they originated, but they've been a very good idea, those things that this ad insults women. Now there's a new one about women can be violent too. What is it? Some rather... I'm not sure how I feel about that one, but it's sort of it's an anti-rape one that is put across. It's here in London, that's where I saw it, the bra ads or something. But it says, you know, sort of, watch out, women can react violently too. I think there's a feeling in America as far as the art world goes, and it is an art world kind of feeling, is that that is obvious. And the now we all know how awful advertising is and what it does to the image and so forth and so on, but so what comes next? I mean, how do you... I mean, Martha Rosler has dealt, I think, with a lot of these things more clearly than most people, because she has a very clear political view. I mean, she knows what she's talking about. A lot of people tend to go into it just sort of taking off ads and...
Yeah,
I mean, it has to be awfully well done.
Yeah.
And I must say, from all of these endless things about ads I see in England, not all of them are terrifically well done. I mean, you know, they have to have a very definite,
well, I think,
clear
that,
point. And
yeah,
also, who is the audience that they're aimed at, and how?
Yes, it's a little bit too loose for me, and also it just really reinforces a well-defined area, in the sense that it doesn't actually take it that much further.
I mean, I think that's something actually Rosetta Brooks said in that article on Eve Lomax that made sense, which was, you know, which has come up in a lot of other areas of feminism as well, but how much do you, are you formed by the opposition?
Yeah.
And, you know, how much by simply opposing something do you end up by being defined by it?
Yeah.
Which is a real, real problem, I mean. Which, I mean...
I mean, I think that
separatism... I'm making the one funny of the noises. Not me. I mean, I was trying to say...
I think that one of the things that there is a kind of need for is a kind of tactical approach. That if you recognise that things aren't static under capitalism, that... companies change, the structures are always flexible and they're completely changing, and all the changes that are taken within multinationalism, within companies, that there's a continuous need for an assessment of that, so that what you're doing is you're kind of explaining that continuously.
Yeah.
That you need to be able to look at it, even if you're looking at only one particular situation.
Mm. I wish instead of constantly taking ads off, you understand what ads do, it becomes really quite simple to make fun of them. I mean, you know, your eye just catches a billion things as you go through any magazine that you could do something with. I mean, that you feel like cutting out and then you could do this with. I mean, I ran across one the other day, which was in the New Yorker, but it was about needle workers coming to, apropos of the fourth issue of Heresies, which is on traditional arts.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it was this little picture about needle workers coming to England and going on a sort of tour where they stayed in castles and they studied and they went out on little tours to see needlework and they stayed in famous houses and so on. And it said, they had this woman at the top and it said, somebody, learn about needlework and live like a king. Not a queen, even, I mean, a king. But it was this little tiny, very sub ad. I mean, it was only a couple of inches high and a little New Yorker, very subtle upper class New Yorker ad. But, I mean, the content was just dynamite in a funny way. When you said, here's this traditional art being led into the castles and American women, rich American women who were taking it up, were going to be trotting around English. Yeah. Coming, ugh. But, anyway, those things do tend to be obvious after a while. I mean, again, since I went to the Whitechapel show this afternoon, I think of a hell of a lot of the things that I saw. Which I thought, oh, yeah, well. And it depends on the audience, and obviously, and it depends on... I mean, I think they're often done better in poster form and everything. What is the point of making endless art, which does tend to be preaching to the converted on this level, and not, I mean, using it... I wish we could all afford to have television commercials. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could do something as effective as that seatbelt ad, which I think is one of the really dynamite television commercial. Yeah.
There's been a lot of debates within the women's art practice about what is women's art practice. Should it be a development of imagery? Is it going to be a totally new thing? If it is it going to come from inside by discovering what our own psychology is and so forth? But the attitude that that I take is that there really isn't anything new that we can bring instantly, but that the new imagery, if you want to call it that, will emerge by actual involvement in things to do with women. So that it's an involvement with the content that will then dictate the form.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's no good sitting around saying, well, performance art is the thing which is most suitable for women, or...
I mean, painting any kind of stylistic thing is really nothing. Is
because all it does is split, splits people off from each other.
And it leaves things out that might be the thing that you personally could do best. I mean, if it gets cut.
But I think that's been a bit of a problem for a lot of younger women artists, that they've seen feminist artists doing things like with performance, and they've hesitated to put their own work forward. Because they're saying, well, I'm not using a progressive art form. And so I think that what you have to watch is that you don't actually give people another kind of uncertainty.
Well, that's interesting, because in the States that doesn't really happen, I don't think. I mean, one thing feminism, I think, has done, and definitely a positive aspect of it, is that it has, by being styleless, even though... there are people who would dearly love to categorize us all and get rid of us fast, you know, in another year it'll all be over kind of thing, but there's a lot of really interesting figurative work being done by feminists on both coasts, and very, very different kinds of, I mean, Joan Semmel with her sexual, very realistic sort of sexual imagery from a female point of view, and Ann Shapiro on the West Coast doing sort of Romanesque strange fantasy things. I mean, they're just, and endless other people. I don't know why those two just came to mind, but and that, I mean, plus the performances and the conceptual things and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
And one thing, I mean, when I started writing about women's art primarily, I was immediately accused by the sort of art community in general, mostly men, of being a retrograde critic, because I'd gone back on those progressive media, which I had been, I mean, conceptual art, especially that I've been involved in, yeah. Which still seems to me, I mean, a hell of a lot of the interesting things that are being done politically are done within a framework and can be easily called conceptual art, which is text and pictures, mm-hmm. which, I mean, most political art, I mean, look at that Whitechapel show, it's, everything has a text. Every little painting has a text, you know, on the label.
Yeah, but I think, I don't think, I think...
Too much.
Yeah. I think that the... So I can't really give it a name. I hate to keep calling it political art, but I think that when...
Well, socially concerned art is something I keep trying to remember to say, but it's a mouthful.
New realism.
Oh, no. Yeah, like everything has been new realism since... a red surface is a new realism.
That what people thought, I mean, what I thought was that it had nothing to do with conceptual art. That although it was using text and so forth, that it had nothing to do with that kind of idea at all. And it was closer to people like Lewis Hine.
Well, I think that...
And that the relationship was there rather than... It wasn't... I wouldn't say it was a development out of conceptual art because
That may be true here, but it really isn't in the States. I mean,
You see, because those people who had been into working in conceptual art, art language, and things started using political imagery 2 or 3 years later.
Oh yeah,
After what? But I would say the political art movement was well underway, you know, and had broken through that whole barrier, you know. So it didn't form a link.
But the conceptual here, it seems to me, I mean, from the bits that I can see, it seems like the conceptual things more or less went into that advertising. I mean, the Stesiker, Walker, Bergen.
But that group. Yeah.
I mean, they did come from conceptual. Yeah. But I mean,
but there's a whole group of people, like all the people who were involved in the debates within the beginning of the Artists Union. I have to keep going back to that because not because the Artists Union is like, an important thing.
No, but who, for instance? I mean, I hate to. We shouldn't get endlessly involved in things.
Well, a lot of they're not around, you see. I mean, that's the worrying thing is that those people who've actually built up that hard bed of consciousness haven't actually been able to survive it.
Yeah.
But those artists who had managed, who were already working within a certain structure. Because they'd got that structure set up for them, were able to then move into it.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think Lewis Hine, for instance, was actually the source of all of that at that point? The early stuff?
No. I think it was.
I mean, it may have more in common with it with a certain amount of hindsight, but I'd be curious to know. I mean, I do think conceptual art, in a funny way, sort of gave permission to do a certain kind of thing. Although, you know, certainly stylistically or whatever. I mean, the fact that conceptual artists came to politics late, I don't think is. To the point, in a funny way. I mean, it's true they did. I mean, good God, art and language used to jeer at anything that was political.
Yeah, exactly.
And then 3 years later, bang. But the fact remains that, and I mean, I'm not really thinking of art and language with the text things. I'm thinking of just all of that use of pictures and text, which then also went off in another very sort of hedonist, sexist branch, which is about narrative art, most of which is really... is by men and is by... I mean, the feminist narrative art is a whole very different thing than something like Roger Cutforth or James Collins or people who are using that to really go right along with the kind of advertising that... I'm getting off the point, but I do think that the third stream aspect of conceptual art did open something up that political art tended to...
I don't think it related to the art movement, you see, and the previous art movement. I think what it related to was a general move with not just within the women's movement, but within right across the board within the students from 68 onwards of a political consciousness.